sensitivity adjustments that were introduced by the Affordable Care Act. And this example uses hospital insurance payment rates. But the Affordable Care Act requires a reduction in the Medicare payment rate updates for almost all categories of providers, and it requires that to be reduced from what it would otherwise be by the increase in economy-wide productivity, or about 1 to 1.1% per year on average. It doesn't require that for the next 5 years or the next 10 years. It requires that forever. And if you have the nerve to make long-range projections like this, forever starts to compound. So the curve that's labeled Medicare, that's the Medicare payment rate expressed relative to the average of private health insurance payment rates for inpatient hospital services. And you can see in currently we're, what, at about 67%. So Medicare pays on average about 67% of what private health insurance would pay. But because of these productivity adjustments where the payment rates are updated relatively slowly, I expect that that ratio will decline steadily over time. In particular, historically, healthcare productivity gains have been relatively small. Hospitals have done better than most other providers, but still, it's their measured rate, as best anyone can measure it, is about 0.4% per year, much less than the 1.1% for the economy overall. Now, I'm going to quote the Medicare Board of Trustees, and where'd Bob go? We actually have one of the members here with us, of course. But I'll quote from the Medicare Board of Trustees. It is possible that healthcare providers could improve their productivity, reduce wasteful expenditures, and take other steps to keep their cost growth within the bounds imposed by the Medicare price limitations. For such efforts to be successful, however, in the long range, providers would have to generate and sustain unprecedented levels of productivity gains, a very challenging and uncertain prospect. So we have this great incentive for hospitals and other providers to be enormously efficient, to improve their efficiency. Can they be that much more efficient year after year forever? I have grave doubts. Okay, let's look at the sustainable growth rate. Everybody knows about this, right? The SGR for physician payments. Similar kind of problem. Currently, we have Medicare rates that are about 80% of private health insurance rates. If we get the next big reduction that's scheduled under current law, that would bring them down to less than 60% or the neighborhood of where Medicaid is currently. And then the SGR formula would cause further reductions thereafter. And eventually, the Medicare payment rates for physicians would be only about a fourth of what the private health insurance rates are. So the SGR, almost anybody would say, is going to be replaced or continually overridden. The productivity adjustments, that remains to be seen. They'll probably work for 10 years or so, maybe longer. I don't think forever. Here's a projection of total Medicare costs compared to GDP under current law. Currently 3.7% scheduled to, or projected to increase to about 6.7, mostly due to demographics. If you say, okay, let's not have these big reductions in physician payments, let's pay them, let's move the updates up to 0% for the next 10 years, and then we'll pay MEI increases, Medicare Economic Index increases thereafter, then that would add about 10 to 20% to the cost projected under current law. If in addition, we say, let's suppose that the productivity adjustments will have to be phased down to a more sustainable or achievable level starting in about 10 years from now. Then we get a cost that could look like this, which is about half again as much as the cost shown under current law. So the actual cost for Medicare is likely to be greater than what's projected under current law, and the trustees acknowledge this. Okay, now what kinds of things have been proposed to reduce Medicare expenditures? There's a long list here. I won't go through them all, or Jenna will get cross. But you've heard all of these before. Things like waste and inefficiency, or pay for performance, reducing provider payment rates. We're already doing that, of course. increasing the beneficiary cost sharing, increase the age of eligibility that that Gene mentioned before. Now, how many of those would affect the growth rate for Medicare, as opposed to just bringing down the level of the cost somewhat? How many would permanently affect the growth rate? Well, this is my take on it. Your mileage might vary, but if you think it through, most of these would only affect the level. And the one thing that would clearly affect the payment rates we're already doing in a way that may not work. And the cost sharing, that's a little uncertain. Now, we've got other possibilities, sometimes harder hitting. We can manage care, more payment system or delivery system innovations, practice standards. We can adopt new medical technology more prudently. Right now, we adopt everything, pretty much. Not all of it's really worth what has to be paid for it. Competition, premium support. Premium support with limited payment updates. Or a flat-out defined contribution or a global payment system. You could do any of these. They've all been talked about. But to what extent do they affect growth rates? Well, we got a bunch of question marks there. For many of them, we don't actually know. There's the possibility, but we're not sure. A couple of these, clearly, like premium support with limited payment updates, clearly that would affect growth rates. Now, you'll notice that these tend to be fairly controversial. These tend to be something like premium support that could not easily be adopted. So the known ways, the ways that are most guaranteed to help reduce cost growth, are also the ones that are hardest to put in place. Well, with that, I'm looking forward to hearing what Mark and Stuart have to say. So thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Rick. I appreciate it. And it's supposed to be, what did you say, informal? So I'm going to loosen my tie. Right. Okay, so here's what I'm going to do, and I've got to move because I got to cut through some things relatively quickly. I'd like to thank Stu for asking me here to do this. I'm speaking on behalf of the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, which is an independent congressional commission that makes recommendations to the Congress. And what I'm going to do is try and pick up where Rick left off and talk about some of the ideas that the commission has been considering in the recent past and potentially talking about in the future. And just to be clear on this, I'm going to focus on containing expenditures, but I want you to know, and actually I should probably start moving this along. I want you to know that our work is much more broad than just containing expenditures. We do look at quality, we look at coordination, we look at graduate medical education. There are other things out there that the commission has been doing, but my focus is going to be very selected, very quick, and focused on expenditures. What I'd really like to do is try and misuse sustainability, trust fund status, and but I couldn't think of how to do it, just to tick off Rick. which I'm going to try and do throughout this entire presentation. So let's try and get right.
Not for the first time.
Yeah. So let's get right to provider payments. So one of the things that Rick mentions is the notion of how much you pay providers. That obviously has a very direct impact on what expenditures are. But I want to give you some subtlety to the way the commission thinks about it. We have to do this annually. And that's required by law. We try and consider a number of factors, including access, even though I'm not going to talk about it in a lot of detail here. And but the subtlety I want to get to are the last three bullets. In making recommendations, we obviously focus on the level of payment. And we do that for a number of obvious reasons. It affects expenditures. Also, I think there's a sense in the commission of having fiscal pressure on providers so that they are constantly looking for ways to contain their own costs. And we think in an indirect way, the levels and prices that Medicare pays send signals about volume and which services to pursue or not to pursue as the case may be. And so it's not just, you know, about levels, but there is a lot of focus on that for the reasons that I just said. But a second level is also what I'm calling distributional equity. I'm not sure what I should have called it. But this is the notion that under any given level of payment, Are there signals in the payment system that are driving providers in the direction of certain types of services or certain types of patients? And so we're constantly trying to look at the payment system and correct for those kinds of problems. So, for example, in skilled nursing facilities, there's been a real push towards physical therapy and away from stroke and medically complex, and we've made recommendations to try and bring a better balance to that. And then finally, because it practically falls in your lap when you do these types of analysis, you look at certain kinds of patterns and see certain abusive or fraudulent patterns, and then we try and make recommendations along those lines. So in talking about provider payment, often our recommendations will have characteristics of all three of these. Okay, next up, this is examples. I probably should have put that slide up halfway through what I was saying just a second ago, but these are examples of ways that we think about provider payment. But I want to draw your attention to one of them as kind of a new direction that the commission is thinking about, and that's site-neutral payment. So again, in the Medicare fee-for-service world, you have all these different acute and post-acute care providers. Often you have the same patient and similar services across the providers, but very different payment systems, and that sends all kinds of awkward signals and distorted signals. And there's been some attention lately in the commission, both in a report last year and an upcoming report, to try and get better parity across the silos in the fee-for-service setting. We made a recommendation to pay equally for physician visits in the physician's office and in the outpatient department of the hospital. And the reason we did that is we were seeing lots of hospitals buying physician practices for lots of reasons. But one of those reasons is if you turn it into an outpatient clinic, you get a higher reimbursement in Medicare and a higher reimbursement in the private side. That increases Medicare expenditures and the beneficiary's co-payments. And I really appreciate the fact that there were people nodding because I didn't know whether people were aware of this, but apparently you were. I'm still trying. Okay, so now I'm going to, what am I doing now? Hold on. You threw me off. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is going to kind of break the flow and do a sidebar on something that Rick said. I told Rick I was going to do this, so there's no drama here. He knew this was coming because, you know, Rick and drama. He didn't see that, right? Okay, good. All right, so we're all together. All right, so one of the things is Rick, and by the way, I don't disagree with Rick. You know, he shows that private sector prices and then Medicare prices going down, and this is unsustainable over time. And I believe him. I mean, I don't think you can cut forever, and to the extent that you have differences in the private sector, you're going to start to run into access problems. But I want to put a little different color into this conversation. Number one, Medicare is often the preferred payer. In the post-acute care setting, home health, skilled nursing facility, Medicare's rates are at the top of that, and private rates are below that. And number two, in the hospital setting, and this is the one that I want to focus on, there is this argument that we've been making that people say, well, Medicare doesn't cover Met Hospital's costs. And that's true. The margin is about 6 points below the cost. But we make the argument that perhaps those costs are not immutable in the sense that costs are influenced by what people pay. And we think in the private sector there has been a lack of fiscal discipline that has led to higher prices, that has led to higher costs, and that makes Medicare margins look really poorly. Look poor, and I'm going to show you that in just a second. But the other piece of that is, why does that happen? And there's plenty of people who have been studying this, Marty Gaynor, Bob Berenson, Paul Ginsberg, people like that. And the argument is there's much more consolidation, and that has led to the ability of providers to set prices really high. So I want to be clear, we should be careful about chasing those prices for a lot of reasons. And this is a very quick chart just to kind of demonstrate what I said. If you organize hospitals into those who get paid well by the private sector and those who don't get paid well by the private sector, those who don't get paid well on the left have below average Medicare costs, about 92%, and positive margins, and those on the right have above average cost and negative margins. This happens to be an old slide because it's the one I could put my hands on, but we've updated this analysis and it still is true. And you end up with this anomalous situation where some of the best off hospitals in the country have the worst Medicare margins that you can find. Okay, now I'm gonna jump. This slide is in case somebody asks a certain question. This slide, why is that funny? I don't understand you people. Okay, so then this slide is a setup for the next slide because I'm worried about time. I'm going to skip it, and so I'm going to go to this slide. You haven't missed anything yet. Okay.